Hi, I am Talia Mollet, and I am here with our lovely producer and co-host and creator of Matter of Life and Debt, Nikki Nolan. Hello, Nikki.
Hi, Talia. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am good. I apologize if my mic doesn't sound as good because I'm currently not with mic.
No worries. Do you remember when my mic, I was always breathing into it and it was just this really.
It was very Darth Vader. And I was like, I don't know how to tell her that she's Darth Vader, but it's so hard to edit.
Until I heard myself and I was like, oh goodness, our listeners, poor things. But yeah, thankfully I've grown out of that mic phase. Speaking of growing, I wanted to congratulate you on your article that's going to come out in the zine over at Debt Collective. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm not typically a writer. And so writing is not the way that I express myself typically. And so it's a little bit about my story and why I started this and why I'm continuing to fight for full cancellation. Even though all my debt is gone, my student debt is gone, I continue to stand in alignment and fighting for full cancellation. And yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we need this fight is a long one and we need as many people on board as we can get. So thank you for that. The name, do you remember? First of all, I read the article and it was awesome. I loved it. Do you remember the name of the article? We'll put the link on the show notes, but just wanted to let you all know that the Debt Collective has a zine that comes out every month. It's called In the Red, Out of the Darkness. And they really do very cool graphics and just wonderful articles that they share on this platform. So we really recommend you all to go ahead and click on the link that we'll provide and yeah, read up on some of the wonderful stories Nikki just wrote here. Her article is called Matter of Life and Debt, A Journey Towards Justice. Love that title.
Yeah, it's so funny. I'm always in the background sending you all things. And it's like Nikki just said, but she's actually here. I'm like always there in a chat bot.
Yeah, no, you're here. You're always. Yes, you're always here. I'm always going to make sure to say that you're around.
I'm also, just a creepy ghost.
It's like the literal thing in spirit. Yes, you are there. In spirit and physically as well. I wanted to also mention, if y'all go through all the zine, I have it written down here how to say zine because it's either, oh my gosh, that word always gets me. Thank you, Nikki, for teaching me the obvious, which is just the ending of magazine. But I also wrote an article on the first one, the very first edition of the In the Red, Out of the Darkness. If you all also want to read that, we can link it. But yeah, look through all of them. They're awesome. And I'm really excited too, Nikki, about the spotlight that we're going to be showing up very soon, just because I know that a lot of our listeners are probably feeling the anxiety, the stress, I don't know, insert negative feeling here that comes with payment being reinstated now October 1st. I'm sure some of us also still have questions. So this spotlight that we had with two Debt Collective members, Thomas Goki and Eleni Schirmer, is awesome. It's very informative. They talk about, again, the tool that they released. That we talked a little bit about that last episode. But here you get to hear it from the mouths of some of the creators of the tool. So yeah, I really want you guys to all check that one out.
It's so cool. And it's so cool how many people have used the tool, and we're a little under halfway towards the goal of people who are signing it. So if you haven't, please go and fill it out. It takes a little bit of time, but it potentially can cancel your debt. Like, it is a tool that is out there based on legal precedent, based on a bunch of things. So please spend some time and do it. It can benefit you.
Yeah, I think you'll hear it in the spotlight. I think we're all right now at like 20K of student debtors that have actually filled out the application. And I think they're trying to reach 40, 43K if possible. So yeah, really encouraging people to go check out the tool and fill it out. And, you know, I just wanted to say that we miss Shanna.
We totally miss her. She will be back soon, hopefully for the 3-year anniversary, which is next month. So, yeah. So we've been doing this 3 years. It's so wild. And the fact that we initially started out with individual stories and have, we still spotlight individual stories, but it's expanded into so many more things and facets and following the journey of this path of trying to get full cancellation and free universal college. And it's been a wild ride. In the last 3 years, it's been so many things have happened in the last 3 years. Yeah. We're like a living document of what the last 3 years.
Yes. And I haven't been here the whole 3 years, but I do, or I should say, and I want to say that it's been a wonderful journey to be in community and in conversation. You, Nikki, and with our lovely Shanna. Yeah, I couldn't ask for a greater group of people to just fight the good fight with. Really happy you asked me to come on board, and I can't wait for next month when we're celebrating yet another solar cycle. So Shanna, we love you. We miss you. We can't wait to see you next month. And with that, Nikki, what do you think if we segue onto our spotlight? This is a really great segment where Thomas Gokey and Eleni Schumer get to talk a little bit more about the tool the Debt Collective just brought out.
Let's get into this. It's so good. I'm so excited for you all to hear this.
Let's go. Enjoy. Hello, everyone. Thank you for being back here at our spotlight section where we get to spotlight tools, initiatives, projects that are focused on all of us living a debt-free world at some point in our life. And today I have two comrades whom I think are just awesome. From the Debt Collective. They've been here before, so welcome back. I have Eleni Schumer and Thomas Gokey with us. And last podcast episode, we talked about the student debt release tool. And I gave a little bit of background around that based on my experience, but I wanted to have two people that have been, one of them, both of them, I don't know how you both want to say it, but I know Eleni was instrumental in all the steps I got to this point from her wonderful articles that were published, which we linked last episode. So all of that incredible investigative work that led to the appeal letter that we have going on now that's live. So yeah, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's always so good to have you both here.
Tom was super instrumental in developing the tool, too. We just need to get that. I need to put that in from the bottom floor. Nothing happens without Tom.
For me, you two are rock stars, superstars, heroes, whatever you want, heroine, whatever you want to title. I'll leave it to both of you. For me, both of you do equal amounts. And everybody at the Debt Collective here at Matter of Life and Debt, we think you all are awesome. And you all are instrumental in how we see and learn about debt. So yeah, welcome. I wanted to basically highlight again, the student debt release tool as of now and stated in this wonderful article that just came out on Truth Out. We'll link it here. It was written by one of the Debt Collective members, Kristen Collier. So from there, I just read that we have over 20,000 borrowers who've already sent in legal appeals to the Department of Education regarding their debt. So I think that's fantastic. That means that people are listening and they're actually on board with this. So before we move into that and how that's what that impact means for you all, Eleni, can you just give us a quick how did we get here with the appeals form?
Yeah, about a year ago, I was working on a story for the New Yorker about the fact, this very surprising fact that folks 62 and older are the fastest growing demographic of student debtors. And this story profiled especially a woman named Betty Ann, who was 91 when I first met her, who owed close to $330,000 of student debt for a loan she took out in 1983. She had been a teacher for decades in Harlem. She's a Black woman, and she wanted a different angle. She was just tired of dealing with inequities in public schools in Harlem. She decided to fulfill a dream that she'd had for her whole life, to get a law degree. So at age 55, she became one of the first Black women to attend NYU Law School. She borrowed about $30,000. And when she graduated, she was not intending to work for another 50 years. So she worked for another decade or so in one job using her law degree, and then was tired, understandably, and retired from that job, but she couldn't afford to retire completely. So she kept working. In fact, when I first met her, she was still working at a sort of a second job as a nonprofit that she was paid minimum wage, basically. And the circumstances of her loan were complicated. And the New Yorker, I had to talk to somebody from the Department of Education to get some verification of some of the details of her loan, what had happened exactly. And that process got me in touch with an ombuds person who said, I believe, holy shit, when she looked at Betty's loan history. What the hell happened here? And proposed a number of options that I in turn passed on to Betty to discharge the debt. She could apply for total and permanent disability, for example, that would require a sign off from her doctor that she couldn't work. Betty didn't really like that option. She didn't understand what her doctor had to do with a loan she took out 30 years before, and didn't frankly want to have to bring it up with her doctor. And she also didn't like the premise that she couldn't work, because she had just until really a month or two prior been working. So she was like, no, thanks. I don't want to be part of that. And the ombuds person was like, well, there might be another way we could get rid of this. Why don't we try? I'll try writing up a memo, a legal memo, invoking the Higher Education Act's capacity to compromise, settle, modify, or release any federal loan. And we can see, we'll send that up to the top brass of the Department of Ed and we'll see what can happen. Betty really didn't want to have a meeting. I never chatted with her by Zoom or FaceTime or anything. So the person at the Department of Ed said, kept proposing all these meetings that we could have, me and Betty and the ombuds office. And Betty was really not interested in that. So she was like, it's the Department of Ed's problem. If they made this mistake, why do I have to waste any more of my time trying to clean up the mess? And within a few days or maybe a week or two of this letter being submitted on behalf of Betty to the Department of Education, all of Betty Ann's loans were discharged, every single cent, which was surprising and incredible. Betty was super relieved, and we at the Debt Collective were all pumped and also intrigued and maybe a bit frustrated. Why did it take so long for this to happen? If it could happen for one person, why couldn't it happen for 43 million people? They have this power to cancel debt, and they're just sitting on their hands. How do we organize around this? Tom and Paul, who's our tech genius at the Debt Collective, and Luke, one of the legal geniuses, and some other people designed the bones of this tool that is now circulating in the world. And I think this is my point of entry, but I do think it's important, and maybe Tom would like to say something about this, that it's leaning into a legacy of the Debt Collective that is more than a decade old and very successful, of using the Department of Ed's legal framework against them to demand debt cancellation. And that was started in 2014, 2015 with the Borrower Defense to Repayment strike, and now application for debt cancellation.
Yes, I think our experience with Borrower Defense illustrates why we think this is a good intervention right now, and also a reality check on that there aren't any silver bullets here, that there's no replacement for organizing, direct action, and political pressure. Back in 2014, 2015, we launched a similar tool that was more narrowly focused at people who had been defrauded by their university. And at the time, there was no place to assert your rights, so we had to make our own. Then the Department of Education just copied and pasted. And I think two things are true about that. One is that 7 years later, over $22 billion worth of debt has been canceled for hundreds of thousands of students. And the flip side of that is that there are people who asserted their rights 7 years ago and are still waiting for justice, right? And there's hundreds of billions of dollars of fraudulent student debt that are about to go back into repayment instead of being discharged, right? So it's been a messy process, but there is some level of success here. And so I think that's our expectation with our current moment, is that there's still a lot that we can win, and it's going to be messy and frustrating, and none of it's going to be easy. But that part of it is to just actually call their bluff. That Biden keeps saying, I've done everything I can, I'm doing everything I can. The truth is he hasn't. They can just cancel this debt. They can do for everyone what they did for Betty Ann. We're going to remind them that they can do that and not give them any excuses not to do that. And this is all taking place within the context of Biden's plan B, right? That his first plan was completely legal, but wasn't very strategic, because he unnecessarily gave a right-wing, lawless, corrupt Supreme Court a way to kill student debt cancellation. And he's doing the same thing with plan B, but he doesn't have to. And we have this narrow window of time, and we're trying to seize the moment as much as we can, and to get out ahead of the Department of Education to both lead and push them in the direction that we want them to go.
Yeah, Thomas, from the last meeting the Debt Collective held around the release of the student debt release tool, you mentioned that the Department of Ed had either told you or you found out that their email system had just gone flooded. But I'm wondering, with the introduction of this tool, what were some of the things that you hoped would happen immediately? Was this sort of stalling of the email, like bombarding of the email type of thing, something that you all expected would happen right away? But what were like the quick strikes that you were expecting?
Yeah, so I should just say people should go to the studentdebtreleasetool.org and they can fill out the form. It takes about 10 to 20 minutes to do. And then it generates this PDF and it sends an email to you so that you've got a copy of it. But then it also CCs the people at the Department of Education who have the authority to take action right now. They don't need to ask permission from anyone. These are the people who are currently delegated the authority to cancel your student debt. So they can just do that. And if you want to, you can reply to that email and it goes to all of their inboxes, right? And this is their work inboxes. They normally get a lot of email and they use it to, like everyone else does, but they normally don't get 20,000 emails. So we heard through the grapevine that this was stressing their system and causing them problems. And the goal here is not just to like cause them problems for the sake of causing problems. But at the same time, the Department of Education is sending millions and millions of emails to all of us saying it's time to pay up. So I think if they can dish it out, they should be able to take it. Like, we should be sending them millions and millions of emails saying, no, cancel it instead. You can do it. Do the right thing. It is the right thing to do. And yeah, and these are people who, they know all of the statistics, but we're just anonymous nobodies in a spreadsheet to them. So I think being able to show up in their inbox and remind them that there are real human beings on the other end of the violence is important.
They have to read these. It is an appeal that we that it generates, right? So it is a request for at least studying our case, no?
This is our hypothesis. Mm-hmm. That the Ombuds Office is mandated by the FSA to come up with a report at the end of every year detailing the concerns that borrowers have raised to them. in past years, that report has included a number of the number of contacts they've had. It's usually, I think last year was a record-breaking year, and it was 100,000 contacts that they got. Most of them have to deal with the PSLF waiver, and they categorize these in various ways in the report. So we do know that they're mandated to provide some report of how people are contacting them, how much attention they're going to give to each letter. This remains to be seen. And I think this is part of our bigger strategy, which is that the letter is useful insofar as it's an organizing tool, that we have just built a little army of 20,000 people who know that the White House and the Department of Education have the power to cancel their debt and may or may not choose to do anything about it. So I think our work right now is to think about how do we engage those people? How do we help them feel more and more entitled to their debt cancellation as Biden's Plan B process is going? What people are demanding in these letters is instant and total cancellation. And what Biden is offering is $10,000 after the end of 2.5 years and a bunch of headaches. So it's a more attractive promise it's a more attractive demand. And I think the question for us now is to figure out what we have going forward is to keep gathering these petitions, keep getting as many as we can. And when we have set an internal goal of about 43,000 petitions, roughly double what we have now. And it's symbolic. There's 43 million debtors, probably get 43 million debtors. Biden didn't get 43 million debtors to apply to his relief. But we think we could get 43,000. And when we have that, then the question is, how do we make people care? Who do we go? Whose doors do we go knocking on? A few weeks ago, 90 representatives in Congress and the Senate sent a letter to Biden saying, you have to do more. You have to do faster on debt cancellation. And those people are now, our question is, how do we get them to stand with us when we go in a few months and march to the White House to deliver our petitions? Who's going to be standing with us, and how do we bring them on board? I think that's the work now. So it's a question of organizing always.
Yeah, the organizing never stops. And how, that's awesome. Thank you for also stating how you all are using this towards the foreseeable future, the near future, however you want to state that. How do you think this is going to work for the elections? I just want to bring that up because we're closing in on that. Biden has horrific ratings. We don't necessarily see any candidates that support this except for Dr. Cornel West. How do you think we can use this momentum, this tool, to get a candidate to say, holy crap, we can use this to maybe get a little bit more, maybe become a little bit more popular, or to, I don't know, maybe hopefully see a good outcome come the presidential elections, if you know what I'm trying to say, and not another 4 years of a Trump?
Yeah, we don't do electoral work, right? I think our theory of change is that we need to build our own power. But at the same time, we can't ignore our system, our electoral system. And I'm nervous like everyone else is. It seems we're basically a coin flip with fascism, and maybe we'll get lucky. But even the best case scenario is still pretty rotten. And it seems like we deserve better. So I'm looking at the victories that workers' unions are having right now and seeing that as the kind of counterpower that I want debtors to have. We aren't powerless to just watch fate unfold, but it also seems like to the degree that we have to, just as ordinary people, engage in an electoral system, that's not where our real power lies, right? We've got much, much more power than that. I also think that it's not our job to help the Democrats get elected or to help Joe Biden get elected, but to the degree that they actually care about this, they should be seriously doing what they can to cancel student debt, and there's more that they can do. And I do think that it could determine the results of not just the election, but like whether or not we are living under for real fascism.
Eleni, you want to say anything to that?
Yeah, I agree with what Tom said. In some ways, to our interest, it's a bit of leverage that we have with Biden. If he wasn't running for re-election or had fallen, had his plan, his kind of like wishy-washy plan A had been executed, I'm not sure if we'd have as much leverage. That the issue, it's a pretty powerful position, state of facts, that Trump paused people's loans for 3.5 years and Biden has turned them on. And I think he's going to have to answer to that. The question for us, I think, is exactly as Tom said, like, how do we keep raising people's expectations, keep pushing people's demands? And the fact that there's power down the chain. It's true that the pen lies with Biden, but the fact getting these 90 representatives and senators to sign a letter, that's not nothing. Ayanna Pressley's calling for a halt to payments. That's not nothing. So there are allies. And I think it's a question of figuring out how do we move into a formation with them. They're not going to do it for us. They're not going to cancel the debt for us. But then we do have allies, I think, and figuring out how to use them and test that question, how much are they going to fight for us?
Absolutely. As we stated earlier, the work goes on and on. My friends, compas, I don't want to keep you any longer. I know that you both have very busy schedules. I, as always, and the rest of the Matter of Life and Debt team, want to thank you for your work in general and just always being a delight to have here on the podcast. Thank you so much. You will be back at some point. Yeah, congratulations on this tool, and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
They are so, so great. It's always such a pleasure to listen to you interview. I want to call that out. You are such a great, and I just feel like have such a nice emotional range, and you get some really good things out of people. And I just absolutely love it. So thank you so much for stepping in.
Thank you. I'm crying now. I'm all teary-eyed. Jesus.
I didn't mean to make you cry.
I don't even know what to do with myself now. Thank you. Wait, thank you, Nikki.
I feel like you've made people cry during interviews. Not this specific one, but you're very good at getting to the root of things.
Thank you. We were all crying in the inside, actually. When you're talking about dead and all this, I remember seeing them. Thomas and Eleni, they're just such hard workers, too. My goodness. They were so gracious, honestly. They always are. They had a really long day and they still made time to sit with us and share, not just obviously for us as the podcast that we want the information, but to be able to share with our listeners and to really get the information out. And yeah, they're such lovely people, honestly. And they're so knowledgeable too. You know, I feel that so many of us come into this movement, let's just call it that. And we don't know a lot. We have so many questions. And to get these two on board to at least tackle as much of those questions as possible is just always a treat.
They're amazing. They've done so much for the movement as individuals and collectively and like just overall the debt collective. It's always such a delight to have them on and learn what they're doing because they're always doing such amazing things. And I'm so glad that I came across them because early in my journey at the beginning, I had no idea about the debt collective and they have totally changed my perspective on things. They've changed what I believe in a way that is really just, I'm just very happy about. So thank you, Debt Collective. Thank you, Thomas and Eleni.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I feel like we missed it a few times, potentially, in a few of the last episodes. But Talia, how would you feel about, like, before we end, what is giving you joy? What is making you hopeful right now?
Joy, joy, yes. I'm really glad that we are bringing this back. Because I feel that it's really important, especially during these times of just a lot of uncertainty, that we do try to focus on something, whatever it may be, that is bringing us joy. And I think right now, I really just want to put out there how happy I am that I joined this journey with you, with Shauna here at the Matter of Life and Debt. Especially as we're looking forward next month to celebrating the 3 years, it's just, I didn't think that I could even sit on a podcast and just do what I'm doing right now. When we were talking about it in the intro, it just hit me. I'm like, wow, man, yeah, this is really cool. And I also have to thank the Debt Collective for that, because you and I met through the Debt Collective. And that's just one of the cool things that the Debt Collective does. It really brings people together for a common cause. And from there, you braid these very memorable and just wonderful networks. You create these wonderful networks. And yeah, obviously, you and Shanna are part of that.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, what's giving me hope right now is all the stuff the Debt Collective is doing. I can't believe, like, they just put out that tool a month ago and over 20,000 people have signed it. And it's just all, it's hard work and it can be really disheartening. But I actually spent time with my friend last week, which gave me a lot of joy. And she is a part of one of the people who got her loans canceled. Because of awesome. The borrower's defense with the Sweet versus Cordona case. And she was just like, thank you so much for helping me track and sign up and do all those things. She's been getting emails from her student loan servicer saying her loans are about to be turned on and stuff like that, even though she was a part of the class action thing. And so because she's able to, like, just message me or even get into the Slack Debt Collective Slack. If anybody wants that, just send us an email and we can invite you to the Slack Debt Collective. She's able to be like, oh, okay, they're doing some dodgy stuff. These servicers are. And so it does give me hope that even though they're doing dodgy things, actual things are happening.
Like, yeah.
And it stinks that they are purposely trying to confuse people. But there are a lot of people who are getting their loans canceled right now because of Sweet versus Cordona, previously Sweet versus DeVos. But there are things that are happening, even though it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I think we've come to the end.
We've come to the end, my friend, briefly. Till next month.
Till next month. Yay. Almost 3 years.
Almost 3 years. Yes, yes. We're going to, I don't know, pop some bottles or something.
Yeah, I know. All of us, like, in different locations and time zones. And I think we're going to try and bring back some of the people from the earlier part and see what they've been doing for the last 3 years. And we're still planning it out, but it should
stay tuned. That'll be fun. I think the first sound that should open everything is... yeah, champagne bottle popping open.
Perfect. We'll just do the sound you made.
Yes. Thank you, everyone, for listening thus far. And we can't wait for another year with you all.
Bye.
Bye. If you like this episode of Matter of Life and Debt, subscribe and share it with a friend. It really helps people discover us. Matter of Life and Debt is co-hosted by me, Thalia Mollet. It is produced by Shanna Bennett, Thalia Mollet, and Nikki Nolan. It is edited by Nikki Nolan and Thalia Mollet. F.A. Ackman created the theme music. Visit our website at www.matteroflifeanddebt.com, where you can listen to more episodes and get additional context for the subjects you just heard about. Absolutely for free. The website again, www.matteroflifeanddebt.com. Thanks again for listening. Mm-hmm.